from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, we take the pulse of the Republican National Convention, which began yesterday in Cleveland at Quicken Loans Arena and runs for three more days. We'll discuss the struggle to garner votes against Trump's presumptive nomination and the uproar over Melania Trump's speech, which sounded a lot like one delivered 8 years ago by First Lady Michelle Obama at the Democratic Convention. Join us for Forum. It's right up ahead after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Yesterday was day one of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, and the killing of three law enforcement officers in Baton Rouge on Sunday set a somber mood for the first day, which focused on public safety and national security. Presumptive nominee Donald Trump appeared, dramatically emerging out of shadows to introduce his wife, Melania Trump, who delivered a speech that has been labeled as having been plagiarized from one which was given at the 2008 Democratic Convention by Michelle Obama. This morning's opening Forum Hour, we discussed the 2016 GOP convention, and let me tell you who is joining us for the hour. Scott Schaefer, senior editor of KQED's California Politics and Government Desk, joins us from Cleveland. Scott, good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
I also want to welcome Bill Whalen, who joins us locally, research fellow at the Hoover Institution, longtime GOP media consultant, regularly blogs for Forbes.com. Bill Whalen, good to have you aboard.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Scott.
And we also welcome Margaret Hoover, who's also in Cleveland, president of American Unity Fund, a pro-LGBT conservative nonprofit. She's also a CNN commentator and author of American Individualism, How a New Generation of Conservatives Can Save the Republican Party. Welcome, Margaret Hoover.
Thank you so much, Michael. And I have to say hi to my friend Bill Whalen from across the continent, who's a good friend and also a fellow at the Hoover Institution.
And we'll also say hello and good morning to Doug Ossie, volunteer for the Trump campaign, former U.S. congressman from Sacramento from 1999 to 2005. And we welcome you, Doug Ossie.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to have all of you aboard here, and all except Bill Whalen are in Cleveland. And let me begin, Scott Schaefer, with you. Certainly the theme yesterday was supposed to be Make America Safe Again. Tomorrow they're going to go on and talk about economics, and we're going to, today, and we're going to talk also about the big story, which is capturing a lot of attention about plagiarism, or what is alleged to be plagiarism. Party unity, though, was also supposed to happen yesterday, and yet there was a great deal of opposition before the convention even began. What happened in the way of what has been described as chaotic things that occurred?
You addressing that to me, Michael?
Yeah. Scott, I was going to begin with you.
Yeah. So I think what was described as chaos was a group of folks who were part of this Never Trump movement in the delegation, not in the California delegation, but nationally. And they were trying to force a vote to basically free delegates to vote their conscience and unbound them, if you will. And they needed seven states' delegations to approve that. I think they got six. There were nine at one point, and the Trump folks were working the floor. So they, by voice vote, lost, and members of some delegations walked out. There was a lot of shouting and screaming. But it was described by California state party officials as a very small group of folks who lost, and lost badly. And nonetheless, they did get some headlines. And, you know, there is a group of delegates, and including many who, not delegates, but people in the Republican Party in California who did not come to the convention because they do not support the nomination of Donald Trump. And that same sentiment is what played out here in the afternoon, in that early part of the first day.
Although some of the California delegates, I mean, Jim Brulte, who chairs the state party, and Tom Clark, who is the director, they said they would go against the so-called Never Trumpers.
No, absolutely. I mean, Tim Clark was the Trump campaign chairman for California. And don't forget, in California, unlike some states, every state has its own rules for picking delegates. In California, they do it by congressional district. And Donald Trump won every single congressional district in the state of California. And so all the delegates are pledged to him along with the alternates. So there wasn't, if the California primary had been held earlier, John Kasich or Ted Cruz might have gotten some delegates. That didn't happen. So the California delegation, while it's in some ways not that important here, as evidenced by the fact that they're staying 60 miles away from Cleveland, they were certainly part of the effort yesterday to stomp out the Stop Trump movement.
What about the effort to keep things under control? There was talk about Republican National Convention staffers actually really grabbing what were considered to be racist signs and tearing them down. There was a lot of commotion and protest outside. What was the security like?
Well, those are two very different questions. I didn't see any of what you described. The security was very, very strict. There is a very large perimeter around Quicken Loans Arena with a 15 or so foot steel fence and lots of police, Secret Service. Once you get swept and go through the metal detectors, you're free to walk around in quite a wide area. But as you would expect and hope, the security's been very tight.
You got a photograph of Donald Trump. In fact, he came that close to you with Melania, huh?
Well, I was in the arena last night at around 7, and I was down on the first floor and just making my way to the arena. And suddenly it's a number of Secret Service showed up and said, everybody step back against the wall. And so I figured somebody's about to come through. And I got out my camera or my phone. And there was Donald and Melania Trump walking past on their way backstage. So just, right place, right time. And he walked right past me. You know.
Well, it was quite an entrance. It came out in the shadows. People have been comparing it to, Beyonce, Stevie Nicks. What was your impression?
It was showbiz. It was very dramatic. The lights went down, and there was this sort of silhouette and sort of smoke, and you see the silhouette, the unmistakable silhouette of Donald Trump. I'm sure, everyone saw it, or many people saw it. There was We Are the Champions being played by Queen. He walked out very slowly, very dramatically, all by himself, said, we're going to win big, and introduced his wife in a sentence or two and left, and she came out and spoke.
And she spoke in a speech which is now getting a great deal of attention. Was there any sense when she was giving the speech that there may have been passages taken from Michelle Obama's speech?
No, not at all. Keep in mind, this speech went over very, very well in the crowd, in the arena. This is a woman who hasn't really been out front very much. And she is, she's from Slovenia. English is not her first language. It was, in terms of her delivery, her personalizing of her husband, it was very well received, and it was well done. She delivered it flawlessly. It wasn't until a few hours or an hour or so later that word began to spread that perhaps passage of it, I think 58 words, were very, very similar, in some cases identical, to remarks that Michelle Obama gave in 2008 when she spoke and gave testimonial about her husband, Barack Obama.
Again, Scott Schaefer with us from Cleveland, senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. And that was a keynote speech delivered yesterday by Melania Trump. It is dominating the news today, and sections of the speech bore a striking resemblance to a speech by Michelle Obama at the Democratic National Convention in 2008. Let's hear an excerpt of the two of them played side by side.
Barack and I were raised with so many of the same values.
The values that you work hard for what you want in life.
You work hard for what you want in life.
That your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise.
That your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're going to do.
That you treat people with respect.
That you treat people with dignity and respect.
Because we want our children in this nation to know
that the only limit to the height of your achievements is the reach of your dreams
and your willingness to work for them.
Bill Whalen, I got to go to you on this. Bill Whalen, research fellow for the Hoover Institution, longtime GOP media consultant, regular blogger for Forbes.com, and a speechwriter for Pete Wilson when he was Republican governor of California. What would have happened to you as a speechwriter if there was that much close, consanguinity between the language?
Oh, I would have come forward the next morning and copped to it, and I'd probably be out of a job that day, and that's probably the easiest way for the Trump campaign to exit out of this gracefully. Just admit they made a mistake. Just admit that somebody inadvertently did this. Admit the error and move on. You have a spokesperson after spokesperson this morning saying that it wasn't plagiarism, it wasn't lifted. And Michael, it's kind of like standing next to a 2-ton elephant and saying, I don't see a pachyderm. It speaks for itself. So to move on, you can't afford to have 4 straight days in Cleveland of a glitch like this. It not only steps on your convention, but it does one other function. Trump has to accomplish several things this week. He obviously has to come across as a little more likable. He has to come across as much more statesmanlike. He has to reach out to parts of the Republican Party that have not appealed to him, and Margaret Hoover could talk more about that. But he also has to give the impression that this is a serious campaign. And when you walk away from the first night and the prevailing story is did or did not, the woman who wants to be the first lady, cut and paste in her speech, that's a bad night.
It's also turned out, in terms of some of the spins on it, to apparently be the fault of Hillary Clinton. At least that's what we're hearing from some of the Trump campaign people.
Well, it's look, I mean, Monday night had a lot of, you know, trademark Trump to it. In fact, we should probably stop calling this a Republican convention and call it what it is. It's the Trump show. It's like watching – it's really like watching an extended version of the Sean Hannity show, if you will, in terms of who's on as guest. There was a lot of harsh language. There was laying out Hillary Clinton in no uncertain terms, speakers literally saying she had blood on her hands for people's debts and so forth. But you also had another trademark of Trump events, which was controversy. And in this case, like many a Trump controversy, a unenforced error, as they say in tennis. Trump has to stop committing unenforced errors, lest Republicans will just not think that it's a serious campaign and they won't vote for him in November.
There was a lot of emphasis on Benghazi and, well, possibly a third term for Hillary Clinton, and certainly a great deal of, well, shall I say, focus on all of that.
Right.
I mean, this is meant to rally the troops, of course, and there was a lot of talk about party unity. Can you get that kind of party unity essentially, you know, in opposition to Hillary Clinton? Because that's apparently what they want to do.
You can, but there are ways to go about doing this. If you go back to the 2004 convention in New York City, the theme there was national security. And last night's theme was Make America Safe Again, national security again. Well, back in 2004, the Bush campaign, which obviously was running on national security with a convention in New York City, which had been struck on 9/11, they used John McCain, Rudy Giuliani, and Mike Bloomberg to talk about national security in both statesmanlike ways but also very personal ways in New York City. The people who spoke last night, Giuliani did take a turn, giving a very just almost over-caffeinated speech on national security. It's really, really out there. But spokesperson after spokesperson were not politicians, people from the elected class. They were people from the victims' class. These were friends, family members, loved ones of people who had died in some way involving national security, be it the war on terror, be it border security with Mexico, and laid out Hillary Clinton again in just very harsh terms. Now, maybe I'm too prurient, maybe I'm sitting too far away in Palo Alto, but I think there's probably a more effective, more dignified way of going about this.
Some of those speeches, particularly one by Pat Smith on Benghazi, where she blamed Hillary Clinton for the death of her son and said that she was told by Hillary Clinton that a video is responsible and never right. had Hillary Clinton own up to it, never got to be seen by many people. There was a cutaway, and the media didn't necessarily serve the GOP in that sense.
Yeah, and that's just a good example of the night in general. Look, she is the mother of – she lost her son. My goodness, who's going to criticize what she's going to say given the pain she has felt in her life? But – what she said is divisive, and after she said it, people will go into one or two camps. They will say, yes, she's absolutely right, or they'll say, no, she can't do that to Hillary Clinton. It's not the kind of comment that I think pulls people over, Michael, and that's, again, the complaint I have with last night. It was just a little too polarizing. It's what in the military they call bouncing rubble, and that's a phrase you use in the military where you bomb a target that's already been bombed. In other words, a lot of the people who spoke last night, I think, speak to those people who are already going to vote for Donald Trump.
Let me go to Margaret Hoover on that. And Margaret Hoover is president of American Unity Fund, a pro-LGBT conservative nonprofit. She's also a CNN commentator and author of American Individualism, How a New Generation of Conservatives Can Save the Republican Party. There's a sense, Margaret, that many people see Donald Trump as being sympathetic to LGBT issues. Somebody called him, in fact, the most pro-gay candidate to come along. But the platform doesn't seem to suggest that, and the platform is causing a great deal of concern among LGBT.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to talk about the platform. I was intimately involved in some of the efforts last week to strip all of the negative language about LGBT Americans from the Republican Party platform. There were last year, last go-around, rather, last convention in 2012 in Mitt Romney's platform, six places where there were negative or pejorative or frankly just mean-spirited references to LGBT Americans. And our goal at American Unity Fund was to identify our allies on the platform committee. As you know, there are 110 members of the platform committee, two from every state, one man, one woman, including the territories, which is how you get to 110. And what our goal was to take these, well, really five negative references from 2012 and strike them. So the process is that you get the first draft of the platform comes out, the RNC gives it to the platform committee members on, you know, the week before the convention, and then it goes to subcommittee. There are six subcommittees. This is the process where delegates actually add or strike language according to their own preferences. And we had several allies who were platform committee members who were adamant about making sure that negative references to LGBT Americans were stricken. And there was even an attempt to add unity language, just acknowledging that even though many Republicans are still in favor and prefer traditional marriage, an acknowledgement at least that there is a changing attitude, even among Republicans, millennial Republicans, even evangelical millennials, about same-sex marriage and about LGBT freedoms. And so that's really what we had intended to do and hoped to do, and frankly, we had a lot of optimism going into this because of Donald Trump's rhetorical leadership on this. I mean, after Orlando, he came out and really fervently defended LGBT people and the horrific and horrendous terrorist tragedy.
But forgive me, Margaret, is there still not in place opposition to same-sex marriage and endorsement of the debunked psychological practice to pray gay away?
Thanks for fast-forwarding to the end. What ended up happening is the Trump campaign chose not to engage. The candidate in this election has the opportunity to tip the scales. They can decide what the platform's going to say, and the Trump campaign and Donald Trump and his representatives in the platform process were utterly absent. They did not make sure that their views and their candidates' views were represented in the platform, and as a result, there was a vacuum, and that vacuum was filled by forces on the far right, social conservatives, who added more than 30 amendments that ended up putting in multiple references that are not just mean-spirited, bigoted. I mean, conversion therapy is now part of the Republican Party platform in 2016. This is a widely reputed practice that is hugely damaging to individuals and well-documented. So,
widely reputed and widely repudiated, one might add, too.
Repudiated, rather, sorry. I get so worked up about this.
Margaret, I'm wondering, though, if this doesn't reflect the fact that Donald Trump, being a different kind of, and a non-politician, different kind of nominee, doesn't really care about the platform.
You know what? He's basically a Potemkin candidate. This is a Potemkin convention. This is a Potemkin race for president.
Well, they're also pointing out that Peter Thiel is giving a speech. I mean, you aren't you meeting with Kate?
That is the 1960 equivalent of saying, I have a black friend. I mean, let's be very clear. Donald Trump's leadership has been nowhere. His rhetorical presence has been there, but actually trying to shape the party in his image, it has not worked, and it certainly failed. I had a front row seat to it last week when it came to LGBT Americans, and I will let you know that there were really wonderful signs of hope. We had our first openly gay platform member on the Republican Party in the platform committee who made a very impassioned plea that actually garnered about a third of the platform committee's vote for unity language in the platform. So while there are sort of, this is categorically the worst Republican Party platform as it relates to LGBT Americans that we've had in our history, there are really positive signs, too, in the progress and I think the future generation of Republicans who are not keeping their heads down, but hoping that, you know, Trump comes and goes and that, you know, they'll be there for the next iteration of the Republican Party and for frankly, its renewal.
Well, the platform has been excoriated by the Log Cabin Group, the Republican Gay Group, and other LGBT community members and so forth. But I understand you're going to meet Margaret Hoover with Caitlyn Jenner in Cleveland and discuss the platform. What's that all about?
Well, Caitlyn Jenner is, as you know, the most famous LGBT celebrity in the world. She is also the most famous Republican celebrity in the world. And she's truly, you know, she is a tried and true, she's a real Republican. And she doesn't think that her identification as a transgender woman conflicts in any way with her larger political philosophy. She is not a single issue voter, as I am not either. Otherwise, I wouldn't be a Republican.
So let me jump in here. You're going to vote for Donald Trump? You're behind Donald Trump?
I cannot support Donald Trump for president. I support a Republican Party that can win elections, that is, you know, open and inclusive, not with, just with LGBT people, but frankly with minorities, with Hispanics, with African Americans, with that frankly is for free trade.
Sounds like some of Hillary Clinton's rhetoric.
Certainly does sound like Hillary Clinton, although I am a Republican who cannot find herself in a position to support Hillary Clinton.
Well, let me take the cue on that, because we're coming up on a break here, and I know I have to say goodbye to you, Margaret Hoover, but I appreciate your being with us again.
Thank you for having me.
Margaret Hoover is president of the American Unity Fund, which is a pro-LGBT conservative nonprofit. Doug Ossie is a volunteer with the Trump campaign. Doug Ossie, what do you say in response to what you just heard from Margaret Hoover?
First of all, Michael, I appreciate getting the opportunity to speak.
Sorry, poor Doug's just been sitting over here listening to us.
So my experience in politics as a member of Congress has been, you know, you don't always get what you want. You can get a lot of what you want, but you don't always get what you want. And the flip side of that coin is, when you look at a candidate, maybe you ought to focus on what he or she does as opposed to what someone says they ought to be doing. So if you look at Trump's business record, you'll find that in his buildings and in his projects and in his investments.
Well, he won't release his taxes, though.
Let me finish my point here, Scott. He doesn't differentiate. He didn't get bogged down in the transgender bathroom issue. He just said, just make it possible for people to go relieve themselves. And he moved on.
Well, so you did criticize him, though, Doug. Well, no, I just want to jump on that for a minute, because you did say that you're talking about what he said and what he didn't say. You said he should have said more about David Duke, and I want to get to that too, but please finish what you're saying.
My point here is that there are four or five issues that I am primarily focused on in this campaign: economy, national security, the border, infrastructure, and getting rid of the status quo establishment in Washington, D.C. Those are the criteria by which I'm evaluating this. I'm sensitive to the things Margaret's brought up. I mean, you can look at my track record voting against the Republican establishment on that. I mean, you can't challenge me on that. I've got good cred on that. But the five things that I'm focused on are the ones I just shared with you, and those are the ones that mean the most to people. And that's not to diminish anybody else's issue. It's to say these are the issues as a country we need to be focused on.
That's not true for everybody. I mean, there are a lot of people who, you know, probably what Margaret was saying resonate with those issues.
Well, and I'm happy with that.
For millennials, yeah, increasingly, and for the people that we need in order to have a voting bloc that can win in this country, that can win national elections.
Over and over. Right.
And we've won one national election of the last six.
Yeah, but let me get back to my question, if I could, with you, Doug Ossie, and that is, you criticized Donald Trump for not speaking up, not saying enough in the wake of the whole Donald Duke thing.
And I want to follow up on that, because Steve King came out yesterday and said some stuff that was just absolutely, like, moonbeamish. I mean, David Duke's a racist. Steve King's a racist. You know, we have to accept them in our party, but we don't have to agree with everything they have to say.
And so, what about the others in the party who are holding this one out, including Governor Kasich of Ohio and both Bushes and Mitt Romney and John McCain?
I know John Kasich and I know the Bush family. I have great respect for both of them. And I have absolutely no doubt that between now and November, they'll come around.
All right. Well,
you
as our listeners can come around and join us. I invite you to do that. In fact, join us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your involvement in the program, your questions or comments. Again, toll-free, you can join us now, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. Or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I'm Michael Krasny. And welcome back to Forum. We're talking about the Republican Convention taking place this week in Cleveland, Ohio. Please give us a call if you'd like to have your voice involved in the program. You can do that at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. And you can also email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org, or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Let me go to a tweet here from Asa, who says, Melania Trump's speech did go over very well last night. It also went over very well in 2008. But then a listener writes, the supposedly plagiarized material took less than 3 minutes to air, including both Michelle Obama's remarks and Melania Trump's. That's about 1.5 minutes out of the entire speech, and the comments were pretty generic in nature. I'll bet that if we look back, we'd find very similar remarks from speeches given before 2008. At worst, it was a speechwriter recalling Michelle Obama's speech, which, let's face it, was hardly the Gettysburg Address to begin with. Can we please focus on substance? Well, let me do that before I go to calls and emails with you, Scott Schaefer. I guess Giuliani's speech was a big hit. I mean, he was sort of giving raw meat and saying, we're warning you, Islamic terrorists.
You know, so many of the speeches last night, Michael, were like that. But I think Rudy Giuliani's was particularly high octane. It did go over well in the hall. But, you know, there's a saying about television that it's a hot medium. And when you exaggerate, it really looks like you're a little out there, a little unhinged. And I actually haven't looked at the reviews in terms of how it went over on television, but sitting there in the hall, to me, it seemed a little, more than a little, over the top, extremely angry, and just really a little over the edge in terms of keeping it together and, you know, scaring people. I mean, I think there were probably kids at home under the beds if they were listening.
Bill Whalen, let me go back to you on something that certainly struck my interest, to put it mildly, and that is talk about, let's get back to the substance here, the platform reinstating Glass-Steagall. I mean, how's that going to go down on Wall Street? Is that true, first of all?
It'll true, but look, I mean, the platform reinstating Glass-Steagall, it's, my goodness, of all the things to talk about in Cleveland this week, seriously, Michael. The platform, you can look at the platform as the parts of the sum or the sum of the parts. And I just, number one, tend to put away the platform because it focuses on the candidate. And believe me, come Thursday night, we'll be focusing on Donald Trump and not really any portion of this platform and whatever he does in his hour of prime time.
Well, I bring that up because it may indeed bring us back to substance. But also, there were a lot of theatrics, and it was, as you said earlier, Bill Whalen, kind of Trump show all the way. When Melania Trump gave her speech, she also singled out Bob Dole. And
She did. Now, this was an interesting moment, I thought, in this regard. Here you are on security night. I mean, one thing that stands out about this convention, Scott can talk about this too, is to the cliche, this is not your father's convention. This is a convention that really doesn't have much Republican DNA in it, not much in the way of Republican bloodlines. Bob Dole is in attendance. Bob Dole turns 93 next week. Bob Dole is the only living former presidential nominee in attendance. Bush males have been in Republican campaigns for 7 of the last 10 elections. Not a single Bush is in Cleveland. Mitt Romney is not there. John McCain is there. It was very nice for her to single out Bob Dole, but I think what is sorely missing here, and this speaks to Trump's unfortunate relationship with the party establishment, it would have been really nice to single out Bob Dole and George Bush, who may not be with us, the elder George Bush, both of whom may not be with us come the 2020 election. Salute them. They're members of the greatest generation of World War II vets. Single them out for all they've done to the party. But this convention doesn't really speak that way. Again, it's Donald Trump's convention. Not to knock Trump hard about this, but it just would have been nice to see both Dole and Bush get recognized.
Well, I have to tell you, it occurred to me at one point, it actually occurred to me that maybe Trump might have had the thought, Bob Dole a loser, because that's essentially what he said about Romney. I'm sorry, Scott, you were going to add something? Scott?
No, I was just going to say, you know, talking about former presidents who weren't there and were there, in some sense, Richard Nixon was there because so much of the law and order theme that was expressed last night was really something that Richard Nixon used in 1968, a very different era. I'm not saying that 2016 is like 1968 in terms of where the country is, but Richard Nixon used that theme very, very well. He got a lot of, as did George Wallace, I would add. And so just like sort of the ghost of Richard Nixon in some ways was there last night.
Well, speaking of ghosts, Doug Ossie, I couldn't also help but remember Donald Trump calling Ted Cruz Lion Ted in the in the campaign, during the campaign, when there were about 17, 18 other candidates, but calling that consistently when it came down to a few. And the reason I mention that is he's going to be speaking at this convention, and now Trump is calling him a great guy. It makes you sort of wonder if this isn't Donald Trump's show, and if those who are speaking are somehow, you know, to get his blessing and be called great guys, and those who were campaigning against him were of a different nature to him.
So politics is a very personal business. You know, it makes strange bedfellows. Those who are with you one day on this policy might be against you tomorrow on a different policy. And that's the art and the genius and the beauty of our system, is that you got to figure out how to get to the end goal, maneuvering your way through all those different challenges. I have great respect for the Bushes. I have great respect for Kasich. I have great respect for McCain. I adore Governor Romney. I mean, I really do. These are good people. But I can tell you, they're going to come around by November, because I guarantee you they're not going to support another 4 years of an Obama administration.
Doug, let me ask you one more question.
Make an appearance with Trump?
I'm sorry, what did you guys say, Scott?
Well, I was asking, you know, Doug Ossie, do you think he would make any of those people would make an appearance with Trump when you say come around?
I don't know in what context it'll occur, but I know they're not going to vote for somebody who's congenitally challenged telling the truth.
I have a lot of calls and I want to get to them, but Doug, let me just follow this up with a question from a listener to you. Alan writes, I did not watch the convention last night but heard sound bites about how the Republicans were going to make America safe again. Did anyone explain how this is going to be accomplished? Were there proposals?
Well, I can tell you one thing. In California, in everybody's neighborhood in California, we've had the Democratic state leadership release criminals from jail, and now the crime rate's gone up and down the state. That's one thing that we could do immediately, at least at the state level. And hopefully, the Congress and the presidency after January 20th will be able to assist the states in getting control back of their neighborhoods. You can't tell me Chicago is a safe place to go. You can't tell me Philadelphia is a safe place to go. You can't tell me many, many neighborhoods in California are safe places to go. And that was the point of last night's indictment of Hillary Clinton, is to make clear that things are not what they should be.
All right, let me bring our callers in. And Frank, you're first up here. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thanks. I'd like to go back to this concept of Republican DNA that was just mentioned, and I'd like to offer the thesis for discussion that far from Trump being an aberration in the sense of an extremist form of Republican DNA, it is rather the Tea Party and the core elements, the base of the Republican Party, that are the ones who are in deepest trouble. I'm hoping, as a yellow dog Democrat, we're watching the destruction of a bigoted and insular group of people that are becoming an ever smaller party. But God knows, Trump may figure out a way to whip up a souffle out of this mix.
Well, Bill Whalen, there's been a lot of talk about the Republican Party being fractured, coming apart at the seams and so forth. What do you say to that?
Well, I say let's see what happens tonight in Cleveland. Paul Ryan is going to speak, Chris Christie is going to speak, and Ben Carson are going to speak. These are three gentlemen, all of whom have entertained presidential aspirations at some time. Christie and Carson having run in 2016, Ryan having been a vice presidential candidate in 2012. There are three people who agree on some topics but disagree on others. Let's see if the three of them can come to some sort of common consensus about the Republican Party where it is today. But the listener is right. This is one of the interesting things to watch for in Cleveland when you ask, what is a Republican in 2016? What is the definition? And how will Donald Trump define what a Republican is in 2016? On Thursday night.
Well, let me thank Frank for the call and go right to another caller. Carrie, that's you. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to hear comments regarding the irony of Trump using Make America Safe Again when he seems to do nothing but make enemies and even incite violence with his rhetoric about every group there is, especially Muslims. He sounds very much like early Hitler in many ways. And also the comments about California and the release of criminals, a lot of that has to do with lawsuits from overcrowding of prisons. Conservatives seem to not want to adequately fund government and fund education, and they would rather have prisons and private prisons to make money off of.
All right, 2 points from Carrie and Doug Ossie. Let me go to you on that first one about, again, the divisiveness that Trump represents for many people in the Republican Party.
It's amazing. You know, when I was in school, people would say things to me that were designed to provoke a response, and the real challenge was, could I discipline myself sufficiently that my response was appropriate and professional? The allegations that Trump is causing these people to go off the deep end and behave like hooligans, I mean, that's just so far beyond the pale. I don't even know where to begin about how ridiculous that assertion is.
Scott, you want to weigh in here? Scott Schaefer?
About whether he's... I wanted to make a comment on the other point that the caller raised, but Yeah, I mean, that Doug made earlier about the prisons being overcrowded and releasing criminals. I mean, let's not forget, and we're getting a little off topic because this is a state issue, but, you know, it was a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit that ordered the state repeatedly to reduce the prison population, and the Supreme Court weighed in and said they had to do it as well. And so there were a number of things, that some things the governor did, some things the voters did. Now, are we seeing crime tick up again, especially property crimes? Yes. And what's going to be done about that? I mean, you know, politics is a pendulum. It swings back and forth. And a lot of these laws that were enacted, like the three strikes law in the 1990s, and all the enhancements of sentences that got put on to the penal code, you know, people, as crime went down, people kind of wanted to shift the other way, and it may come back again. But, you know, again, you can't lay all of these issues on one person, whether it's Jerry Brown or Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump.
But you can lay it on years and years and years of a political hierarchy dominated by Democrats who have refused to build new facilities to incarcerate people who are invading our homes or harming us at the individual level.
But you know, Doug, when Scott mentioned Nixon, it brought to mind, you know, 1968 was all about law and order. It's almost redux here in many ways, isn't it?
I tell you what, you go into some of the poorer neighborhoods, and that's where the feeling is the strongest, about get these animals off the street. I mean, my neighborhood, we're pretty well protected. But you go into some of the poorer neighborhoods where the police are challenged in terms of maintaining control. You've got gangs. You've got individuals out of control. Don't come to me and tell me my neighborhoods and my communities are safe, because I know the statistics, and they are not. And there's a direct relationship between releasing people from prison and an increase in the crime rate.
I got a challenge to you here from Marjorie Doug Ossie, and let me get your response. She says, Mr. Ossie, you referenced Donald Trump's record in business. Does he find it at all troubling that he took his Atlantic City businesses into bankruptcy numerous times, resulting in significant job losses and destruction of small businesses? Also, does Mr. Ossie agree with Mr. Trump, who has said that there is no drought in California? And if he disagrees with Trump on these issues, what are the positives which he supports?
All right, so let's take those one at a time. From a business perspective, not every business deal works out. And I suspect that there are a number of affiliates or associates of the Clintons who have gone through a bankruptcy proceeding also. So if we're gonna talk about Trump's bankruptcies, let's talk about the bankruptcies that Clinton is associated with also. So that's just a unfortunate aspect of business. Sometimes it doesn't work out. Now, repeat your second question about the drought.
There's no drought in California. He did say that. Trump did say that.
Well, I think he was there in April, and at that point we had enough water, but it's been exceedingly hot since then. We don't have enough water, and that water that we do have, the regulatory agencies are dedicating to protecting the fish and other species instead of humans, and that needs to change.
We'll bring in more callers. Tyler, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. As a millennial and first-time voter who isn't comfortable voting for either Trump or Clinton, but I value the importance of being able to vote, what would your advice be in terms of choosing a candidate? I mean, I find it so concerning that so many Americans and young voters feel like abstaining from voting due to the fact that they just can't like either candidate.
If you want to exercise your franchise and not vote for either candidate, there is a Libertarian candidate on the ballot, there is a Green Party candidate on the ballot, and we're going to actually try to talk to those candidates. It may be sort of a lost cause in many respects with the domination and money of the Republican and Democratic parties, but you do at least have that option, and I thank you for the call. Let me, Scott, you have any advice for all young people like him?
Well, you know, young folks, it's great that he was involved. He didn't say that he was working for Bernie Sanders. I kind of got that impression. You know, young people, and by young, I mean, you know, 18 and up, 30 up to 35, they don't generally participate in politics. Their turnout numbers are very low. And so whenever a candidate comes along, whether they're on, you know, whoever they are, if they inspire people to get involved and volunteer and vote in a primary, that's terrific. And, you know, the Republicans face something similar right now. I talked to Jim Brilte, the California party chair, and, Donald Trump has brought a lot of new people into the party. And a lot of these delegates here at this convention, about two-thirds of them have never been to a convention before. They're novices. And so Jim Brilte understands that in order for the party to grow in California, not only do they need to reach out to women and minorities and LGBT people, but they need to hold on to the folks who are here in this convention for Donald Trump. And so it's not unusual for people, whether they're young or old, to get inspired by a particular candidate. And the trick is always to keep them engaged. How do you do that? And, you know, for that caller, maybe it's incumbent upon Hillary Clinton. But for others as well, they face both parties face similar challenges.
My advice would be focus on the issues that are important to you in your everyday life, and then find the candidate that most closely aligns with your view on those issues.
All right, we'll bring another caller in from Greenville, South Carolina. Lacey, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Let's
see. I wanted to comment on Margaret and her interview a bit earlier, how she said that the RNC platform did not support Trump's beliefs and support for the LGBT community, but yet he has been caught on video numerous times saying that he will elect or nominate Supreme Court judges that will overturn marriage equality rights. I mean, it's over and over and over again. He is on video saying this. It's indisputable. I'm wondering where this Margaret lady came up with the information that he really was ever in support of the LGBT community.
Well, we don't have Margaret Hoover with us anymore, but Doug Ossie, he is seen as being pro-gay, lesbian, transgender often, and yet the caller makes a good point here.
So the courts have been very clear that all Americans have equal rights. They've settled this question. Now the legislative side of things has to catch up. And that's one of what I think is the geniuses of Trump, is that he's not bound by decades of philosophical rhetoric. He is trying to figure out how to move forward in a way that works for everybody. He's not picking and choosing his customers. He's saying to everybody in his businesses, look, if you can pay the price, come on in. I don't care. It's fine. We'll deal with it. And I always go back to look at what people do in their private lives versus what they say in their public lives. Because it's what they do in their private lives is who they are.
Scott, do you want to say something here?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, you know, this notion of is Donald Trump a supportive of LGBT rights? He did come out against the law in North Carolina, the so-called bathroom law. But, you know, that is also something that troubles conservatives very much in California and elsewhere, is they don't feel that Donald Trump is really a conservative. You know, he used to be a Democrat. He's given money to Kamala Harris and to Gavin Newsom.
To Hillary
as well
Clinton?
To Hillary Clinton, invited her to the wedding, one of his weddings. And so, you know, I think that it's going to, if he gets elected, but even in the course of this campaign, it's going to be interesting to see which Donald Trump emerges, because he does seem in many, especially on social issues, to be more laissez-faire about it.
Well, I'm going to go to Bill Whelan on this, because Bill Whelan went also out of perhaps codify this a bit by suggesting that maybe the criticism one hears most about Trump is he's narcissistic, he only cares about Donald Trump and his family, and that's certainly in opposition to the idea that one should be on board with one's fellow Republicans and never speak ill of one's fellow Republicans, the 11th commandment according to Ronald Reagan, all of that sort of thing. I mean, there is a kind of polarization here that one has to observe, isn't there?
Well, there is. And again, if you look at polls right now, Trump is getting about, these are nationwide polls, tracking polls that I look at, he's getting in the low 80s among Republicans, Michael. That's about 10 points below where Mitt Romney and John McCain were. Now, the good news for Trump is that is a lot better than it was a few months ago when he was polling down in the 60s and the 70s. There's a gradual rise, but he still needs to bring the final 10% on board to get to a point where he can compete and win a national election. Change does not come easily to Republicans as certain issues are this way. We saw this on the Democratic side with same-sex marriage, where Hillary Clinton was very much missing in action until finally basically Joe Biden came out, Barack Obama came out, the court came out, and now suddenly she was very much pro-marriage. But on issues like same-sex marriage and abortion, you mentioned I worked for Pete Wilson. In 1996, Republicans had a convention in San Diego. I'm sure Congressman Ossie was there. Pete Wilson thought that it was time for the Republican Party to move on abortion, so he proposed a personal choice plank, as he called it, which took away abortion language and just said we can all agree that abortion is a tragedy and we have to look at ways to curtail it. He was really he got into huge trouble at that convention for doing this. He became a black sheep of the Republicans at that convention for doing so. 20 years later, it's still a hand grenade for Republicans to toss on. So we can talk about contentious issues and hope that Donald Trump or somebody can solve them in four nights in Cleveland, but this is a long conversation for Republicans to have on certain social issues.
And I want to go to more callers, and we'll welcome Kay from Santa Rosa. You're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to comment on Melania's speech, which at the time I heard it, I thought, well, that sounds pretty good. And then to find out it was largely plagiarized is disappointing. I mean, we might have heard who she is or that maybe she has some intelligence in there, but no. And now people just say, oh, well, never mind about that. Let's talk about the real issues.
Okay, I'm sorry. In all fairness, I wouldn't say it was largely plagiarized. About 50 words that we're talking about here. In a speech that went on for considerably more in terms of the words, if you want to count words. But you were disappointed, obviously, but just as a result of that, as many were, I suppose.
Yes.
Okay, I thank you for weighing in.
Can I offer a comment on Mrs. Trump's speech?
Yeah, Doug Osi, go ahead.
I actually think both parties should adopt a rule, if you will, that requires the potential first spouse to stand up and affirm that their spouse is good people, that they tell the truth, that they follow through on what they do. I think that ought to be a requirement because I think that gives assurance to the people of this country who they're looking at in terms of these offices. And I can't wait for the day when former President Clinton has to stand up and say the same thing about his spouse as Mrs. Trump said about her spouse.
That'll be Monday.
Yeah. Doug, do you agree with the campaign's response to this whole speech flap? They're blaming Hillary Clinton. They're saying, you know, she is too jealous of another woman taking the center stage and all that.
This is just a total distraction. It's a total distraction. Let's talk about the issues that are central to the future of this country.
Well, what should they do? I mean, these lines. What should the Republicans
do? They should talk about the economy and national security and our border and infrastructure and jobs and education and trade and the ability of the future generations of Americans to have the same opportunities given to them. Not the guarantees, but the opportunities given to them that were given to my generation. That's what they ought to talk about. Because the Democrats have no response for that. None.
Bring another caller into this. Joshua, join us. Hi.
Hi, yes. I'm so glad that the most recent caller brought up the speech. Even if it is just 50 words or however many, plagiarism is plagiarism. If you are at an undergraduate school, you would be expelled. That's a lack of accountability on Trump's campaign staff for not accepting the fact that she did steal Michelle Obama's speech. Furthermore, if we are going to talk about issues, I've heard none from the GOP. All you guys do is perpetuate fear and paranoia. And I'm really interested to hear how you guys care about people without privilege of class and privilege of race, because I have not seen any of that from people who are at the RNC now and Fox News media outlets or the Trump campaign staff, not caring for the general public of the United States of America. And I just want to say that we are better than this, that We should be more educated and more aware of the person that Trump is and his followers.
All right, Joshua, thank you for the call. It's actually an interesting point, Bill Whalen. I mean, are we going to hear in this convention, you think, anything about the less privileged or the voiceless people or the people who need help from government?
You've got 3 nights to let this all play out. Let's don't bury the Republicans after one, up and down night. Paul Ryan is speaking tonight. Paul Ryan is the classic Jack Kemp Republican. Jack Kemp believing in empowerment, especially in inner cities, giving people home ownership and more personal responsibility. So see what he has to say. See what Chris Christie talks about and his record in New Jersey. See what Ben Carson, a personification of a self-made man in America, see what he has to say. So let's don't bury the Republicans. Not to continue this mosh pit that is plagiarism, but by the way, Barack Obama was caught lifting words from Deval Patrick back in 2008. Joe Biden crashed and burned in a presidential room when he was caught lifting Neil Kinnock's words. So we can go on all day about politicians plagiarizing. I do think if the Trump campaign just admitted somebody made a mistake and moved on, it would end this.
Well, Doug Osi, we're getting some pushback for you. No Doug Osi in KQED form. You don't have to accept GOP racists. Remove Representative King and others who make the GOP a white nationalist haven. Black Lives Matters. Another listener, Alex, says one of your guests said they don't need to agree with racists, but they do need to include them in their party. As a follow-up, What is the reasoning behind that statement? Why does a racist deserve such an elevated, prominent position, such as a speaking role in your convention?
Well, let's not forget the fact that the Democrats put into the fourth-ranking spot in the hierarchy for the presidency a guy named Bob Byrd, who was the former Grand Wizard of the KKK. So if we're going to talk about racism, let's put it all on the table. Okay? The Republicans have never done that, but the Democrats did.
Of course, Senator Byrd did repudiate his, shall we say, young, what he called mistake of becoming a member of the Ku Klux Klan.
Well, and I would add what Jeff Sessions last night from Alabama has a history, the questionable history, I think, over race as well.
Is Sessions on the ticket?
No, but he spoke at the national he was invited to speak at prime time.
Well, going back to the question about Black Lives Matter and what have you, I thought the sheriff from Wisconsin spoke very well. I think the vast, vast, vast majority of thought in the United States is that all lives matter. Everybody needs to have the opportunity to succeed, period. It's not about skin color. It's not about gender preference. It's not about religious preference. It's about being an American and having an opportunity.
Well, that's, I'm looking at another tweet here that says, why is nobody calling out Law and Order as a racist dog whistle? A rather provocative remark from a listener. And I thank all the remarks and all the observations and comments and questions that you as listeners contributed to this hour. And let me thank the guests, too. We've been talking with Scott Schaefer, senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. Thanks for joining us, Scott, and good luck in Cleveland.
Yeah, thanks very much.
And thanks to Bill Whalen, research fellow at Hoover and longtime GOP media consultant. You can read him in Forbes.com. Thanks, Bill, for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
And thanks to Doug Osee, volunteer for the Trump campaign and former U.S. congressman. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Michael.
And thanks to Margaret Hoover, who joined us years before, president of American Unity. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producers are Amanda Stupai and Jeremy Siegel. And we get online support from Amanda Font. Our interns are Brandon Yu and Maxine Scheffer-Wolf. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Executive producer is Joanne Wallace. For all of us here, I thank you for listening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.